Hello and welcome to another edition of the Scarlet Nation podcast. I'm Bobby Darin of ScarletNation.com of the 24/7 Sports Network, here to talk Rutgers basketball on the start of the Big Ten tournament day. Rutgers is a number 13 seed. We'll take on number 12 seed Maryland. It will take place Wednesday night in Minneapolis. If Rutgers wins, it advances. If it loses, looks like the season has come to a brutal end. And to kind of talk about that and what lies ahead, we're also going to look past the Big Ten tournament and talk about the all-important transfer portal and who stays, who goes. To help me sort all that out, I have my man Chris Sakonis here. Chris, I'll just jump right into it. You know, you've been covering the team all year. They beat Maryland, lost to Maryland. Is there a chance that Rutgers can pull this game out and advance at least one game into the Big Ten tournament?
I think so. If for no other reason than the fact that Rutgers and Maryland are kind of two teams that are mirror images of each other. Neither team has played particularly well in the offensive end as a whole this season, but both have had pretty good defenses. You look at the two games they play in the regular season, Rutgers won 56-53 in College Park and then lost the return game 63-46. Both have combined 109 points. So it's almost certainly going to be a low scoring affair. It's going to be one of those, you know, grinded out type of games that Rutgers has, you know, historically, you know, been able to win some of those and this season and have won a lot more of them before this season. And I think that benefits Rutgers in a way that if Rutgers were playing, you know, a more run and gun type of team, I don't know if it would. So I do think that there's a chance that Rutgers could, you know, get this and turn this into some positive momentum. I'd have to say right now, the game looks like a coin flip to me, just, you know, neutral site, you know, two teams, like, as I mentioned before, pretty similar in terms of, you know, general style of play and efficiency numbers and all that. So, you know, I think that's going to be an interesting component to it, but I do think Rutgers has a chance to win at least this game. And then next step would be against Wisconsin the next day. So it'd be a very quick turnaround as these conference tournaments usually are, but that's where I kind of think things stand. I think it's an opportunity for Rutgers, but I could just as easily see Rutgers just not being able to get enough points and just that's how the season ends. So we'll see what happens, but I do think there's a chance to answer your question.
Yeah, and I think it'll come down to actually just like you said, they have to be consistent with the shooting, have to score some points because I think, like you said, it'll be a low-scoring affair. And, you know, who's going to step up? They have that guy that can knock down some shots, and it doesn't seem like it lately. It just seems like the life has kind of been siphoned out of this team. Just the inconsistency has been running rampant. And I mean, any other keys you see is to them trying to revitalize themselves and get a W tonight?
Yeah, well, I think, Steve Peichel sat down with team radio announcer Jerry Recco, and he talked a little bit about the matchup, and he said, you know, there were times in the second game or in the first game where they struggled with Maryland's pressure. In the second game, Steve Peichel says, you know, they got us on the glass, did a really good job. So Rutgers is going to have to find a way, even if the shots aren't falling, I think rebounding and just, you know, taking care of the basketball are going to be two really key things because this is probably not going to be a game where Rutgers is going to shoot the lights out. Rutgers just hasn't really been able to do that too much against anybody, but particularly against a Maryland team that, again, is very well organized defensively. I think that's going to be a pretty tough ask. So I would say the keys would be to not get, out-rebounded on the glass. Rutgers have had some games where it's been really difficult to get any momentum on the interior in that regard. I really do think, you know, if Rutgers can generate more shot opportunities than Maryland, I think that could go a long way towards getting the win.
You know, Chris, regardless of how it plays out, you know, it doesn't look like it's going to be a major run through the Big Ten tournament. So automatically everybody looks towards next season. And with the obvious arrival of impending arrival of Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper, a lot of excitement. But, you know, this team and the roster management is going to be interesting in the offseason. I mean, we've talked about, you know, having certain guys have to leave to fill spots and to have enough roster spots. But rather than go through that again, you know, let's just look at some of the players. I mean, chances of staying or going. I mean, you were at senior day and the way Cliff Amore was talking, it didn't seem like he was coming back for another year.
No, that was my impression as well. And I mean, you look at just sort of where he's at, you know, he's played four seasons. He's going to have options professionally at the next level to play and really, you know, get a career going, most likely overseas. You know, there's also the option of if he does want to play another year of college basketball, he could, you know, go into the transfer portal. There'd probably be a decent amount of NIL for him, just in the sense mm-hmm. that he's an elite rim protector. He's someone that can really at times impose his will on the boards as well. You know, he's a guy that, you know, if you're a top end team looking to add a presence on the interior, he would be a good guy. So, you know, I don't want to say anything definitive, but right now it doesn't really look like his returning is likely. And that's mm-hmm. going to really raise some questions at the five spot heading into next year.
Yeah, and they have some guys in there. And I guess that's, you know, that's a discussion for another time. But it just seems like, you know, it seems like the probability of him coming back, some of the games you've seen him, it didn't seem like he was his old self with being into it 150%. He hasn't really developed much offensive game in the last couple of years. You know, we heard about him stepping out and shooting from the perimeter and really haven't seen it. So, you know, I guess if I had to make a bet too, you know, I would bet on Cliff, you know, find a greener pasture somewhere else in terms of NIL, because he has a chance. He goes on the open market, Chris, and some of these teams with money to throw around are going to throw it at him, and he could collect a really nice payday. And it's obvious that Rutgers has struggled in the past with retaining players, which will be an interesting topic again when it comes to the next guy I want to talk about, Mawat Mag. You know, you see what he's done in the past, but, you know, we were talking about it before this podcast and you looked up the facts. He missed six out of the last eight games, missed a lot this season, last season after the injury. You know, can he consistently be back to the player he was prior to that ACL? That question is going to hurt his value in the open market if he decides to enter the transfer portal. So I think he's a guy that's more retainable in terms of dollars and cents when it comes to NIL than Cliff. But, you know, he's another question mark. What's your thoughts on Mawat returning for another year?
Yeah, that's another interesting one, right? And I do think, again, it is in large part going to come down to NIL. In terms of whether or not Rutgers can match any other offers that, you know, he's getting. As you mentioned, Bobby, you know, the injury history is a question mark for him. So I do think that'll dampen it a little bit. But at the end of the day, you're talking about a guy that, you know, when he's healthy, has proven himself to be, you know, one of the most versatile defenders in the country. He can really guard pretty much almost every position. So, you know, he's a guy that would be very valuable as a supplementary piece on a really good team, which, you know, I think Rutgers could absolutely be. But I could also see other contenders willing to, you know, reach out and make an offer. One thing I will say is, you know, we have not heard any indication that a decision has already been made. It's still very much up in the air in terms of what Mawat Mag is going to do. You know, we won't get a definitive answer likely until after the season. But, you know, the situation with him is far from settled one way or the other. So that's what I would say about that. But again, I do think, you know, the NIL is going to be a factor. And I also think, you know, putting that aside for a second, I think Rutgers has a pretty good pitch for him in that you get to play alongside Ace Bailey, Dylan Harper, and be really a key piece. If Rutgers has an experienced, versatile defender in the starting lineup alongside those two freshmen and, you know, some other players who could come back, we'll get into in a minute. You know, I think that has the makings of a really potent starting five. And I think that has to be an exciting prospect. And I think it's one that Rutgers is going to be pushing heavily with him as they try to keep him on the roster.
Agreed. And, you know, Mawat hasn't really benefited a ton from NIL up to this point. So it might be, you know, his moneymaker year. So, you know, and you also have to consider who is in these guys' ears, who's telling them certain things. I mean, go back to Jaden Jones. His camp was telling him to leave after doing nothing at Rutgers and entered the NBA draft, and he just got really bad advice. So a lot of it comes down in these situations to who's really close to these kids and who has an influence over them, young men, I should say. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. And you know, you alluded to, you know, some other players that we'll talk about, and one of them, Jeremiah Williams, who I'd like to bring up next, you know, came in. Rutgers was 10-10, 5-6 with him in the lineup. They had that four-game winning streak, which, you know, he was a large part of, and it really looks like he will be a nice fit with Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey. And, you know, he's already transferred twice. This is his third school. Rutgers stuck by him through that whole gambling investigation. You know, they were loyal to him. They did everything they could. Does he reward them with two more years? I mean, does he look to transfer to a fourth school? I mean, it seems unlikely, but in this day and age, you just never know.
Yeah, I would say right now, based on, you know, just his situation that you outlined pretty well, I just don't see it. You know, the one mantra I sort of live by with the transfer portal is never say never with the transfer portal. So I'm never going to give a definitive statement while the season's still going on. But I just don't see it. As you mentioned, Bobby, this is his third school. This is a school that, you know, took a flyer on him, really. If you look at, you know, his situation and where he was in, and, you know, he got eligible to play, didn't look for a long time like he was going to be able to play at all this year. I just don't see him picking up and leaving after, you know, 11, it'll be 12 games with the Big Ten tournament. But I just don't see it. I think, you know, I think he seems pretty happy at Rutgers. You know, I just think it's a good situation for him. And again, to go back to the point about Moat Magg, you know, he'd be playing in the backcourt. He'd almost certainly be starting, I would think, alongside Dylan Harper next year. And that has to be a pretty tantalizing prospect for him. So I think that's, he's probably one of the more likely ones to stick around. And I think that's good for Rutgers because I think he could be a really important piece next year.
Yeah, agreed. And you know, like I said, the transient nature of his career so far, it makes him a little more inclined to stay put because he's in a really good situation and there's no guarantee that, you know, the grass will be greener on the other side. But, you know, they're kind of the three primary ones. But also you have to consider Gavin Griffiths. You know, Chris, he did not have the season that many expected. And there were times he looked frustrated, dejected on the bench. I mean, you know, so, I mean, does he say, hey, I can develop better offensively elsewhere, or I'm going to stay put and go with these guys because he could really benefit from getting some open looks. But, you know, he showed some stuff at the end of the season, but you have to question, you know, what he's thinking of his offensive development in this system.
Right. And I think, you know, one of the things that I think limited what he could do offensively, in addition to just, you know, the physicality and the speed and everything of Big Ten basketball, just being a huge jump from where he was coming in, you know, I think, you know, playing on a team that doesn't have really a lot of offensive creators or shot makers to draw defensive attention away from him, you know, I think that really limits what he can do in terms of, you know, getting, you know, good, open, efficient looks. Because if you cut up the video of his shots, they're generally not like high percentage looks. And that, I think, has to be frustrating for him because this is a guy that, you know, I mean, you've seen his tape, you know, like when he gets efficient looks, he's perfectly capable of knocking them down. The issue is not that he suddenly, you know, forgot how to shoot. He knows how to shoot. It's just a question of getting him in the space. So I think if he sticks around, you know, he's going to be playing with, you know, in any given moment, you know, two, three guys potentially, depending on the specific lineup, where, you know, the best perimeter defender is not going to be on you. You're going to have the ability, if you're Gavin Griffiths, to get more efficient looks and have, you know, a Dylan Harper, you know, setting up plays for you. So I think that has to be an attractive possibility. You know, on the flip side of that, you know, this is a guy who's 1 year removed from being a top 50 recruit. If he were to enter the portal, I do think there'd be interest, even though the freshman tape was, you know, a bit underwhelming compared to what, you know, maybe people were expecting coming into the season. So I think that, you know, I think it could go either way. I think it's an interesting case. I think you can make an argument either way. I'm not entirely, you know, convinced one way or the other. But I do think that he would be another player who would be able to take a big leap next year, given the talent coming in, if he were to come back.
Right. And, you know, Steve Pike was close with the family. He didn't come out as a kid who was NIL hungry out of high school. I think he sticks it out another year. And look, if things continue to go the way they have this year, then, you know, this is a different conversation we're having at this time next year. But for now, I think you'll see him back. But, you know, I'm not so sure about another guy I'd like to talk about is Derek Simpson. He's averaging, you know, 26 minutes a game this year, Chris, and it just doesn't seem like those minutes will be there next year with Jeremiah Williams and Dylan Harper expected to hold down the backcourt. I mean, you could see those guys getting 30 minutes a game. I mean, where does that leave Derek Simpson? You know, he's, you know, likes to be a scorer, likes to shoot. He's not afraid to shoot. Does he stick around or does he try and parlay his success this year into a transfer somewhere else?
I think it comes down to, you know, if you're Derek Simpson, how much do you value, you know, maybe getting as much playing time as possible compared to the flip side of, you know, okay, maybe I'll take a lesser role next year, but I get to stay at Rutgers. I'm in my home state, you know, on a team that has a potential to really do some damage. You know, I think, you know, again, you can make a case either way. I think, as you mentioned, Bobby, I think it's very doubtful, barring anything drastic happening, that he's playing 26 minutes next year. I think his role will be off the bench. I think he's probably not taking as many shots when he's in the game if he comes back. And I think, you know, he has struggled to make shots at times this year. I think that might actually be, you know, a better role for him if he is to stay at Rutgers. He could be a little bit more of a facilitator, a little bit more of someone who does other things. Because I do think there are things that Derek Simpson, you know, does reasonably well. But I think, again, it comes down to, you know, is how much does he value playing time versus, you know, being with the program? So I think that that's an interesting question. And I think it really comes down to what which one of those two he prefers.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if he came back. I would, if I had to hedge a bet on that one, I'd lean more towards him, you know, finding somewhere else just because of the, you know, just because the minutes I don't think are going to be there. And I think he knows that. But I would have to say something a little different along the lines of the next guy I'd like to mention is Jamichael Davis, you know, wound up starting this year. He's played with Ace Bailey in high school. They're coming in. I think it's pretty much a lock that he sticks around and doesn't try to test the waters. And you know, he was an under-the-radar recruit and on a team that struggled offensively. I don't think he'd find a lot in that portal. And he's set up in a situation where he could play good minutes off the bench next year, playing with his teammate. I'd say he's pretty much guaranteed to be back in Piscataway next year.
Yeah, and he's a guy that, you know, has sort of, you know, you talked about it, he struggled a bit offensively, but, you know, he's a guy that on the defensive end has really shown some signs of being like one of those, you know, stoppers. You know, these Steve Peichel teams, Rutgers, it feels like they've almost always had a stopper, someone you could rely on the defensive end. And I think he has a potential to really blossom into that next year. He'll likely be playing less minutes. He's been starting for a while. I don't think that'll happen next year, but I think he'd be willing to do that, and I think that, you know, he could be a dangerous person off the bench in that regard, in addition to the factor of, you know, playing with Ace Bailey, something that, you know, from everything I've heard, is an attractive prospect for both parties. So I think that that is another factor to likely keep him around. And I think he could be an important depth piece for Rutgers next year off the bench. Because again, this is going to be a team that's going to need depth in addition to the top end talent. I think Jamichael Davis has a role to play in that.
Agreed. And, you know, going down to the front court now, Anton Wolfolk, you know, had some ups and downs this year. When Emmanuel Ogbali came in, it kind of, you know, threatened his playing time. You know, I think a lot depends on whether Cliff stays or goes in regard to Wolfolk's decision. But what's your take on that situation?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, right? I think a lot of people, myself included, were expecting to see a little bit more out of Antoine Wolfolk than we ended up seeing. I think it comes down to, you know, playing time versus, you know how much you value staying in the program. Rotation wise, you're bringing in Lathan Somerville at center. You'd have Somerville if Ogbali wants to come back, you know, he would be there. Wolfolk could play at the four, could get some minutes at the five. I think it depends on, you know, are the minutes there for everybody? Because keep in mind, there's also the possibility that Rutgers might want to bring in an extra big if Cliff leaves. So I think that for both of them, it really comes down to the minutes. I think recently, you know, Ogbali's been getting a little bit more run. There have been games where we haven't really seen much of Antoine Wolfolk at all. So I think if he wants to get playing time, he's going to probably have to take a transfer. And I think he could find success in a new spot if that's what he decides to do.
Yeah, and, you know, we can lump Ogbali in there with Wolfolk. You know, he's a guy that did, you know, sat out, you know, more than, you know, what was it, the half the season he was pretty much out, coming back from a knee injury, and he's just kind of getting his feet wet, junior college guy, and you know, he doesn't fit the new mold of that big who can step out and shoot, but he's more of a traditional, you know, low post guy, and in the Big Ten, you kind of need that off the bench, that body, that size, and you see he has some raw talent, and I think, you know, he's pretty much a lock to stick around, too. It didn't have much going on coming out of Monroe Junior College. So I think we'll see him back as well. But, you know, the last two that we need to talk about, Chris, I wouldn't bank on coming back. First, we'll go with Oscar Palmquist. You know, had a very unique situation that he left last year, transferred to Elon, but oh, all of a sudden he's back. I don't see the minutes for him next year. And you know, he was part of senior day. I think, you know, if he wants to play another year, you know, it'll be somewhere else because Rutgers might need that roster spot.
Yeah, I think Rutgers could use that roster spot. I think depending on, you know, how many people come out and decide to enter the transfer portal, maybe there's room for him as the 13th man, and 13th scholarship. You know, maybe as just like a veteran program guy, but I agree, Bobby, if he wants to see significant playing time next year, he's going to have to transfer. And I think, again, that's really going to be the main thing for a lot of these guys is, you know, if you transfer, it's because you want to get more playing time. You want to get more time on the court. And I think that, you know, in Pompquist's case, is a big factor.
Mm-hmm. But I can also see a scenario, you know, he came back, he likes the program, you know, if there's not a lot of options and they do have a 13th spot, I could see Pike saying, hey, you know, play for another year. But I mean, he would have to come into the season knowing, look, I'm not going to get much burn, you know, I'm not going to get much playing time at all. So, you know, I don't think it's a loss if they lose them, you know, and I think it opens up a roster spot. But, you know, it's a very crazy season when the portal season hits. So anything can happen. And but the last one I'll mention is Antonio Chaul. Really didn't get any playing time this year, appeared briefly in 7 games. You know, if he can't get on the court this year with this team, I don't see it happening next year. And I think, you know, they kind of have that talk with him saying, look, I don't think it's working out here.
Yeah, I just don't see a path for him to break into the rotation next year with the talent coming in. You know, I kind of thought going into the season we might see him play, you know, maybe 5-10 minutes most in the rotation a night, but we didn't even see that out of him. And I found that interesting because he has shown in practice an ability to score, and this is a team that needs scoring, but I think the fact that he still wasn't able to break into the rotation, given that, I think it kind of says a bit about where he is in terms of the program and in terms of his readiness to play in the Big Ten. So I think he's probably near the most likely to transfer just from the perspective of getting playing time. And look, this guy that was a former 3-star recruit, he'll have options at different levels to play. And I think he could, you know, from what I've seen out of him in limited glimpses, I do think he could put a nice career for himself together, but I'm skeptical that that's going to happen here at Rutgers.
Yeah, he'd probably have to step down a level and you know, play at a smaller school, you know, but you know, that kind of pretty much sums it up. So what's interesting about it, Chris, is usually you're talking about one or two guys and, hey, what are they going to do? We just ran through 10 guys. And while, you know, some of them are really good bets to come back, it's interesting conversations to have because you can always consider the alternative now with the transfer portal coming out. And, you know, with those 10 guys we mentioned, you have 5 coming in. So you automatically have to get 2 of them out of there. Any more move on, you know, and then you're talking about adding guys in the transfer portal. So beyond the Big Ten tournament, which, you know, is not expected, like we've talked about, Rutgers is not expected to make a big run through it. There's going to be a lot of talk about who's staying, who's going, who's transferring, who's leaving, and it should be an eventful offseason.
Yeah, that for sure, given, you know, what's coming in, given the holes that Rutgers is going to try to fill in the transfer portal. I mean, this is to a greater extent in football, but even in basketball, you know, the offseason almost kind of begins with the transfer portal before the season really ends. You know, the fact that we're having this conversation on the opening day of the Big Ten tournament, I think says a lot about that. So I think that's going to be an interesting thing to watch. And this could be a very different looking roster in a month's time. So I think it's going to be interesting. I think it's exciting for fans to sort of see, you know, next year's team, which could have some really special pieces, really come together.
Yeah, and, you know, it can happen really quick, too. If you remember back, Jacob Young tweeted out that he was transferring about a half hour after Rutgers lost in the NCAA tournament. So it could happen really quickly, and we're going to stay on top of it. We'll have continuing coverage of Rutgers basketball, Rutgers recruiting transfer portal. You can converse with Chris and myself on the Roundtable message board on ScarletNation.com of the 24/7 Sports Network. Until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.